So I'm doing an interview with Bo Jacobs. He's a historian of nuclear technology working at the Hiroshima Peace Institute. Bo, thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
As you were there in the Peace Park on Friday, could you comment on the atmosphere in Hiroshima that day?
The atmosphere in Hiroshima that day was quite unusual. It was a little bit chaotic. You know, there's always a lot of people and a lot of activity down there, for example, on August 6th, but everybody knows what's going to happen. Everybody knows where it's going to happen. And so in a sense, even though it's very busy on August 6th, there's very little unknown about it. Whereas on the 27th, when Obama came to town, it felt a bit frantic and chaotic downtown. There were tons of people down there. There were tons of people from out of town. And nobody quite knew exactly where they could go. I mean, they knew that they had to get out of the park at various points, but they weren't sure if there was some place they'd be able to see something, what they'd be able to see. And so I was over on the east side of the park, and there was just tons and tons of people sort of, you know, pressing into the intersections as close as they were able to get, you know, a couple blocks back from the river, a block back from the river. Running down to another one, running up to the front by Densha Dori to see if they could see the helicopters land there. And so there was kind of a chaotic and frantic energy, it seemed to me. It was fascinating.
Okay, yeah, that's what I've heard as well. And some people who were set up in a position they thought was beyond the perimeter and they would be able to see something, and then all of a sudden all the buses pulled up in front of them and they weren't able to see. I think there was a lot of frustration from what I heard as well.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, I mean, it had this feeling of celebrity gawking.
Yeah.
Somebody came out of, I was sitting right by the hypocenter. It's actually where I sat through the whole visit, across the street from it. And a lot of people were in the buildings there so they could see from higher windows. And some girls came out, and this girl said to me, "Oh, Obama, I saw Obama," and she showed me on her phone. And it was essentially a video of five or six vehicles racing by the street on the other side of the building. And, you know, that just seems like, you know, Academy Award celebrity spotting or something.
Yeah, yeah. There was something on Twitter, I can't remember where it was from, but somebody had said they thought the crowds coming out on the street while the cars were going by was an amazing spectacle, which they didn't expect. And they didn't, you know, expect so many people to come out on the day and wave at the cars and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I had a feeling that the town was filling up for a week with people, and I heard from all kinds of people that I knew that were coming to town for hoping to see a speech, and so I could tell that it was going to be pretty frantic.
And what are some of the impressions of the speech that President Obama made in Hiroshima on Friday? Did you have any surprises, or was it as expected?
It was pretty much as expected. I thought there might be a little bit of a stronger aspirational statement about wanting a world without nuclear weapons. You know, it was included, but I thought that would be sort of a key point. It was very glad for him to speak with respect and dignity of the dead, who it shouldn't be any kind of accomplishment to wait 70 years to give respect and dignity to innocent civilians. I was a little bit shocked by, you know, there's always this passive construction for talking about the nuclear attack, especially in America, that the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. But he used the phrase death fell from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if you want to put this into the interview, but to me, this, you know, that's the kind of a phrase that would be used by a spousal abuser to describe how something happened.
Right.
So I thought that was, you know, it was just so... It was placed in such a neutral neutral phrasing. It was a bit shocking to me, but mm-hmm. But I thought that his speech was very much what I expected as someone who's watched him for 8 years, which was a very well delivered speech with some powerful emotions in it. It was very good. It was very humane.
Mm-hmm.
It was dignifying the people that were present and the people who died, and all of that was really beautiful. But there was absolutely no content in terms of policy.
Right. De-emotionalized kind of terminology, which is not uncommon for political speech about nuclear weapons. Am I right?
Yes, and it seeped into the public discourse. I mean, I've made, like earlier in my career, I made a conscious decision that I would always refer to it as a nuclear attack and never as the bomb dropping on Hiroshima.
Right.
And I would try to always say Hiroshima and Nagasaki instead of using Hiroshima as shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
I would say also, just as an aside, that this is a similar construct to getting people in the world to use the phrase comfort women. I mean, it's an unbelievably insulting phrase to call people subjected to sexual slavery comfort women. I mean, that's the phrase used by the people who are subjecting them to that.
Right. Yeah. And I thought it was an interesting combination of, like, desensitized speech, like how the bomb was dropped instead of an attack. But also he was using very personal wording, like the part where he's talking about the spouse touch across the kitchen table and looking at your children, and that's what the people in Hiroshima would have experienced 70 years ago. So making it very emotional and very personal, as well as the political wording, I think there was a real combination there, didn't you think?
Absolutely, and that's Obama at his best. He can really make you feel emotions. He can humanize things. I thought that was extremely well done, and especially when you place it in contrast to Harry Truman referring to Hiroshima as an army base 71 years ago when he first announced it to the U.S. public instead of as a city. It's a big distance for an American president to speak with that kind of tenderness and interpersonal emotion about who were the victims here.
Right.
That's what he does so well. It's you look at the political campaign in America today and nobody can talk like that.
Right. Yeah, and we don't expect anyone in the next presidency to be able to talk like that.
No, nobody who has any chance to win will be an orator on the level of Obama.
Yeah. And I watched him greeting the troops in Iwakuni before he came to Hiroshima. And he has that dynamic personality. He is so good at talking to people. He's diplomatic. Did you get that feeling?
Maybe John Kennedy was the last American president that sort of just had that knack.
Right, yeah. Can I go to the next question?
Sure.
So despite the statements which seem to aim at reducing nuclear weapons, Obama's term as president has seen very little reduction. Do you feel that he was speaking less as a president, more on a personal level in his speech?
I think there was a little of both. I think that he was clearly working on his legacy, establishing his legacy as a peacemaker, and that's a little bit personal as well, of course, as professional. I think that as a president, he was taking steps to solidify the alliance with Japan in as part of the turn against China,
mm-hmm.
and there were political reasons to come here to help give Abe a boost for Abe's support for policies like the TPP and things like that.
Okay.
So there was political designs in the event itself, but I think, you know, it. He, I think that he. He, this is partly his vision of himself. He started his presidency in some ways with a speech in Prague and will finish it by making this, you know, move that couldn't be made by anyone else to come to Hiroshima, and that these are sort of like bookends of him as a statesman and a peacemaker.
Right. It was really interesting in his speech in Iwakuni, which very few people saw. I don't think it was publicized as much. But he was telling them that he really appreciates their position in Asia as peacekeepers and humanitarians. And I thought that was really interesting before he came to Hiroshima.
Well, absolutely. And you can imagine right now that American troops stationed in Japan are under a lot of pressure because of the horrible murder in Okinawa. So boosting their morale and telling them that what they're doing is important and, you know, is helping to enable peace. And I think that that was also a part of what, you know, in terms of the political part of his coming with Abe and giving Abe some great exposure to, was to try to help try to help put a better narrative about America into the Japanese press than the horrible one that was in the press all last week.
Right. Yeah. A lot of questions on Twitter, and of course, because it was so connected to Abe's leadership, do you think Abe's gonna feel pressure now to go to Pearl Harbor?
I'm not sure, because there's a way in which for the American press, you know, they're so domestically focused that they're sort of done now, and it'll just be right. A few people that really pursue whether he goes to Pearl Harbor. I think that I don't understand Japanese politics very much at all compared to American politics. So if I would believe that if Abe was to go to Pearl Harbor, it would be for domestic political purposes.
Okay. Yeah. He's coming up to a new election, aren't they, in Japan? So he's
and it might be seen as a negative on the part of many Abe supporters,
right?
For him to make such a trip,
right? Exactly. Do you have a chance to talk to any hibakusha after the speech? What was their impression of it?
I did not have a chance to talk to any hibakusha. Days like that for me are, in a sense, working days, and I was up giving interviews at 7:30 in the morning, and so once it was all over, I just went out and had a nice dinner. So
right.
I have not had a chance yet. I have not been back to work since then.
Yeah, everything I've seen online has said that they were fairly pleased with what Obama had stated about not increasing nuclear arms in the world and stuff. Have you heard similar things?
Yes, and I think that just being given the respect, being hugged physically, you mm-hmm. know, for the one fellow, I think that the hibakusha community, everything I've seen has been very, very positive for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
The stories of hibakusha are being spread all around the world through this. I'm asked always in this town, probably as an American, you may be too, but why do Americans think this was not a bad thing? Why do they think this was a good thing?
Right.
And so for hibakusha to feel like, well, the president came here and showed respect and dignity and you know, not remorse, but just compassion for what happened, I think that that's a tremendously emotionally healing step to take in no small way.
Right.
For the president, and that I think a lot of hibakusha, my impression is that that's what they felt. There isn't, by the way, in the Mainichi today, an editorial by former Hiroshima Mayor Hiroka, which is deeply critical of the visit.
Uh-huh.
But he's not a hibakusha, however. He was certainly a very instrumental in advancing a lot of policies and supporting hibakusha causes when he was mayor and also worked at the Chugoku Shimbun.
Right. He was the mayor before Akiba, right?
It was in the 90s, so I'm not positive that there was someone in the middle.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was interesting, like you mentioned before as well, that he made a point to mention Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the speech many times, and you had mentioned that that's a very important thing to do.
Yes, people constantly use the word Hiroshima as shorthand for Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and I just find it respectful to always... Nagasaki was attacked with a nuclear weapon, so I always want to include it when speaking about the nuclear attacks.
Right.
And I was really glad he did. And, of course, you had the Nagasaki mayor and governor there. So, in a sense, this trip was a shorthand visit to both. So I think it was important and obviously very politically adept to use that phrasing and to mention Nagasaki.
Okay, yeah. And going back to what we were talking about earlier... there's a few residents, Japanese as well as foreign, who were quite surprised by the lack of access they had to this event. Like, people had expected when Obama would speak in the Peace Park that they would be allowed to go and watch it in person, as the Peace Memorial Ceremony every year is open to the public and thousands come into the Peace Park. Why do you think this speech was so unusual in how it was limited to so few people?
I think that I think this is exactly what I expected. This is the way that the President of the United States travels in foreign countries for the most part, is with a gigantic security bubble around him.
Okay.
If he had spoken in an indoor in an indoor setting that was a completely controllable physical space, then they would have filled it up with people. But in a public space like the Peace Park, where you have all kinds of buildings, I'm sure there were sharpshooters on top of buildings. Uh-huh. There always are when the president speaks outdoors.
Okay.
It's such an uncontrollable space, and you had the public in that space for hours earlier that day, that from the point of the Secret Service, this was the only, I'm sure it was just protocol, this was the only way to secure the location.
Right.
It was okay. Exactly what I expected.
Okay. Yeah, so it wasn't at all unusual.
No, I think that people, you know, sometimes other heads of state visit here, and there's a small security bubble around them, but people don't get what the security bubble around Barack Obama or the President of the United States is. But it is a security bubble that's easily, if he's outdoors, it's easily a kilometer.
Okay. Yeah, I think in contrast to how people-friendly his visit was in Hanoi, which was right before Hiroshima, I think in contrast, people were saying, why are we kept at such a distance? Is Japan really so much more dangerous than Hanoi? That seems crazy, you know?
And also, you know, the possibility of anybody having a weapon here is so slim.
Right.
You know, compared to Vietnam.
You would think so, yeah. He was holding babies and mingling with the crowds in Hanoi. I think that was a real surprise to a lot of residents.
Well, I'm sure that those situations were far more securitized than they appear.
Right.
I didn't see that footage, but often when you see him interacting like that, there's a security perimeter that people have to pass through to get into the interior space, which could have been done at the Peace Park too.
Right.
In which, you know, it's made certain that nobody is carrying a knife or a gun or any kind of weapon.
Right. Yeah. Thanks. Also, I know it's kind of a controversial topic about tourism in Hiroshima, but Hiroshima was kind of rebuilt on the basis of tourism in an effort to promote peace and reducing nuclear arms around the world. Do you think there'll be more of an Obama effect on tourism? Will more people come just because Obama came, do you think?
I think absolutely. I think people for whom he's a heroic figure, and this is a lot of non-Americans, mm-hmm. As well as for Americans who admire him, they will want, you know, they saw the Peace Park in a way that probably, most people have never seen it, you know.
Right.
Most people probably have just seen a picture of the dome or something like that. But here it was a physical space. They were watching visually. They saw him standing there. So to place yourself in this place that you saw history happen, people really like to do that. And as you know, there's an extremely large rise in what's called dark tourism.
Yes.
I heard once in the park on August 6th, years and years ago, I met a religious studies scholar who was there, who said that she was working on a book about how dark tourism has replaced religious pilgrimage. And I thought that was a really good framing for it, because there's this way that going to places where history happened, but especially traumatic history happened, is a process of authenticizing or giving your life more authenticity. Like, you can speak with authority, like, you know, I've been to Auschwitz, so I can say this or that or the other thing, or I've been to Hiroshima, so I can say...
Yeah.
And so this has been on the rise, and it's partly a way to infuse our lives with meaning and connection to a world that's, you know, often at a distance from us. And so I think it will only enhance that. I think it will absolutely enhance that and increase the amount of tourism here, both to stand where Obama did this historical thing, and also because it raises the profile of Hiroshima in the minds of people who are actively dark tourists,
right?
You know, going to Chernobyl and things like that.
Yeah, not technically dark tourists, but in my interactions with tourists in the Peace Park and Miyajima, there's often a real interest in peace. Like, I came to Hiroshima, especially people who come with families, you know, like they want to kind of experience peace and rebuilding. And do you think that will be more of the type of tourist that will come to Hiroshima?
Yes, absolutely. That's part of that sort of religious pilgrimage thing. It's like, right. The ability to infuse your own life with a deeper sense of the importance of peace because you've been to some place where peace is so important. You know, it it's an emotional and, you know, almost a spiritual renewal to go to places like that. And, you know, the use of the word dark doesn't mean that there's any dark meaning. It just means that it's sites of historical trauma. And people go there not to gawk at trauma or at death, but because these are the sites that resonate in our mythology of the world we live in, because religious sites don't so much the way that they used to, but people like to visit places that give their lives a sense of being connected to mythic things. And in our lives, you know, the mythic things are often large historical tragedies. And in coming to a place like Hiroshima, most people don't come here because, you know, the dark part just implies that it's a place where a dark thing happened. But the motives of the people coming is to increase their connectedness and their sense of meaning. And I think that people come to Hiroshima. I'm frequently, of course, at all kinds of nuclear-related events in different places, and people will invoke having been to Hiroshima as a means of having authority. So they'll say, well, I've been to Hiroshima, and I can talk about peace, and I can tell you about how bad nuclear weapons are. So it, these are empowering reasons that people visit. But the phrase, I think, by academics was made dark tourism, but it certainly doesn't imply that the motives of people are in any way dark.
Right. I mean, there are some who have a morbid curiosity, but I've never met anyone in Hiroshima, of all the tourists I've talked to, who've had just a morbid curiosity. Most people are looking for deeper meaning.
I agree. I think that especially when you think of the Americans, the people who come here self-select as people with compassion and an interest in peace.
Right. Yeah, on a personal note, as an American, I always try not to jaywalk when I'm around the Peace Park. And, you know, just show a little bit more respect and, you know, like, be on your best behavior. Yeah.
That same friend of mine who helped me to acclimate when I first got here, he said, you may feel invisible, but believe me, you're not invisible.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
They do notice. One last question. Do you think Obama's brief experience in Hiroshima will influence his policymaking on nuclear weapons at all? I mean, he's not in office very much longer, but... is there going to be an effect?
I think the die is cast. I mean, there's nothing really he can do. I mean, actually, there is something he can do. It was the one thing that I was hoping he was going to do in his speech that he can do unilaterally, and that is to take the weapons off of alert status.
Oh, okay.
You know, we have, I believe it's 1,200 of the nuclear weapons on what's called hard alert, which means that they can be fired. That's partly what the nuclear football with him is in control of. They can be fired in 10 minutes, 10 or 15 minutes. So they are ready to be fired at all moments. And we don't have enemies that are that threatening to us currently. And we really are not at risk of a big war with the Russians the way we were. And this is how horrible accidents happen. So he could do that. But if he was going to do that, I think he would have announced it in Hiroshima.
Right.
So, you know, his policies have been absolutely... You know, I like to say that he aspires to be a peacemaker, but what his day job is commander-in-chief of the military and commander-in-chief of the nuclear weapons.
Right.
And in that capacity, he's managed them as an effective manager, and he's committed the U.S. to this ridiculous amount of money to modernize the nuclear arsenal and the nuclear delivery systems.
Right.
I believe that comes to $66,000 a minute, which is over $1,000 a second for 30 years. And as an American, I mean, to me, this is a way to guarantee that students will graduate with $100,000 debt and people in their 70s will work at McDonald's, because we would get way more security by spending $1 trillion on increasing the security of people in their lives, our society. But his policies are directly in opposition to his discourse. And, you know, this is in the last 2 years, this commitment of $1 trillion of spending over 30 years. So this is the direction he's chosen during his presidency, in the last years of his presidency. There's absolutely no reason to think anything will change.
Thank you so much for all your comments.
Oh, my pleasure. It's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you.